Okay, so we'll pause here after verse 21, and then we'll do the rest of the chapter tomorrow. Please read the rest of the chapter. It's the actual process of taking the bodhisattva vow and generating the bodhicitta, so it's good if you read this. Okay, so questions now. Okay, please tell us more about the situation of Western monastics in the U.S. I was told that some monks and nuns need to wear layman's clothes to work in private jobs, and then at night put on their robes, their monastic robes. Does the abbey provide them monastic training and shelter so that they can improve the Western, in order to improve the Western monastic order? Unfortunately, the situation of Western Buddhist monastics in the West is, it's a difficult situation. At least for those of us who are in the Tibetan tradition, because the Tibetans themselves are a refugee community, so they take care of their own Tibetan monks and nuns who are living as refugees in India, or the native ones who are still in Tibet. But the Westerners are not provided for. Somehow there's the assumption that if we're Western, we must have money, which is not always the case. And so it is the case that some Western monastics are forced to, they don't have a monastery to live in, or a temple or a Dharma center to live in. And so they're forced to go to work to earn money. And so they have to put on lay clothes to do that, and then in the evening put on their robes. So for some people, they do that. I made a very strong determination when I ordained 31 years ago that I was never going to do that. And so I've never had to. I've been in situations where I've been extremely poor, but I never did that. But I do know other people who are doing or have done that. So it's a difficult situation. One of the reasons that I'm creating Srivasti Abbey is so that people who have the monastic inclination will have a place to live and have room and board. You know, so all the monastics and even the lay people who come to stay at the abbey, we don't charge anything. Yeah, and we operate purely on donations. And people, when I started the abbey, they told me I was completely nuts to do this. But, you know, we've managed so far. We depend completely on donations from people. But what this does is it provides an opportunity for Western monastics and for people, and when I say Western, I don't mean necessarily people with white skin. I mean people who are non-Tibetans. So actually, Western isn't the right word to use. I would say for non-Tibetan monastics, you know, a place where they can come and train, you know, and not have to worry about room and board. So this was one of my ideas in starting the abbey. And also to give a place where people can have monastic training, because clearly if somebody has to go out and work a job, they don't get the monastic training that they need, and therefore it's hard for them to remain as a monastic, and even if they do, it's hard for them to really teach others because they haven't had the proper conditions to study and practice themselves. And so, you know, the abbey is a place where we're at the beginning now, you know, but where we can really practice and learn the monastic discipline so that we can have more teachers that can be sent out to teach, and where people, lay people, can come and live with the monastic community and practice together with us and come on retreats, and where people who are thinking of ordaining can come and stay and live with the monastics to see if it's a way that they enjoy and a way that they want to continue doing that. Okay? So we're one of the first places like this in the U.S. And so you're all welcome to come. And I should tell you, the way the Abbey is, in our Dharma teachings, we're going to be studying according to Tibetan Buddhism primarily, but in our monastic training, we're going to take the lineage, the Chinese lineage. Okay? So, for example, I was ordained, my full ordination was in Taiwan, so I have the Chinese lineage, even though I wear the Tibetan robes. Okay, so the whole Abbey, Srivasti Abbey, will be like this. Yeah. Okay, what else? Okay, because of their noble intentions, Buddhists generally become more docile, and people with other religious attitudes become more successful in life. If I become more successful, I may have more power and money, etc., to benefit more people. What's your opinion? First of all, I don't think that becoming a Buddhist necessarily makes you more docile. Yeah, it makes you more patient. But if you really understand the Bodhisattva intention correctly, it doesn't make you docile. Compassion doesn't mean that you let other people walk all over you. Okay, it doesn't mean you become a doormat. That's not compassion, that's stupidity. Okay, there's a big difference between compassion and stupidity. Yeah, so, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to just be docile, whatever somebody wants, fine. No, you can be very assertive and you can be straightforward, but you're also honest and truthful and looking out for the welfare of everybody in the situation. Okay, I don't, you know, it may seem that people of other religions are more aggressive and so they're going to get the promotion and da-da-da-da-da. But, you know, like I said, I've been saying the last few nights, I don't necessarily see that as the measure of success in life. Yeah, I don't see having a higher status job or having lots and lots of money. You know, it's successful by societal standards, but by my standards, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're more successful. Because how I define success is people who are happy and people who are creating virtue so that when they die, they can die peacefully. And I define success as people who are creating the causes for liberation and enlightenment. Okay? So there's different definitions of success, and you have to see who is more successful in which areas. Some people can be successful in both areas. Okay? They can have a high status in society, they can have money, and they can also be quite generous and create a lot of virtue. Okay? Then there are some people who are successful in a societal way, but not successful in their life. They have a ton of money and they're wealthy, but they're also miserable. Then there's other people who are very successful in their private life. They're very happy. They have virtuous intentions. When they die, their death is very smooth. They're on their way to enlightenment, but they don't have a lot of money. And then there's some people that are not successful in either area. Okay? So we have to really think what success is. Okay, so the question is, how can we help those victims in the recent Nepal crisis? Can we chant for them? Well, first of all, the recent thing is not in Nepal, it's in Tibet. Okay, they're different countries. Yeah? But I think whenever we see social unrest, that it's very good to send compassion to those areas, you know, and to have compassion for everybody in the whole situation. Yeah. So there's unrest in many parts of the world. I mean, Iraq also. There's war, there's unrest. In Kenya, there was things going on a few weeks ago. So wherever we see unrest and people who are unhappy, then to generate compassion and send them compassionate wishes, so that these conflicts can be resolved in a way that brings happiness to everybody who's involved in them. And so that the conflicts can be resolved without anybody getting hurt or injured. Okay, so what does it mean when we say that karma is ripening? Okay, so karma ripening means that, you know, karma is our actions, so actions that we've done in the past. And the ripening of karma means that these actions bear their results. So like I was saying before, that generosity is the cause of wealth, and, you know, lying to others is the cause of being lied to, okay? So you have this relationship between the actions, such as generosity and lying, and their results, such as being wealthy and being lied to, okay? So karma ripening means that the actions were done, there's been a seed planted in the mind stream, and now that seed is ripening and bringing the result. So that's what karma ripening means. And then this person's question is they say that they've heard that sometimes when you are a novice monk or nun, that some of your karma will ripen faster. So if so, why? It depends, you know. Not necessarily karma doesn't ripen faster. Because remember, karma means good karma and it also means bad karma. Yeah. So in some situations, because a person may be practicing purification, then some of their bad karma may ripen more quickly. But we always say that that's very good, because that karma ripens in a small illness or something going wrong this lifetime, whereas it could have ripened in a huge amount of suffering in the future rebirth. So if a monastic is, or anybody's doing purification practice, you know, sometimes that negative karma may ripen. You may fall ill, but when you do, you should say fantastic, because that was the karma that could have ripened in me being born in the hell realm for an eon. You know, and compared to being born in the hell realm for an eon, being sick for a few days is okay. Yeah. Similarly, it could sometimes be that when we are ordained and engaging in a practice of virtue, that our good karma ripens more. Because when we abstain from harmful actions, then we create situations in which our good karma can ripen more easily. When we do negative actions, not only do our negative actions create the negative karma, which will ripen in the future, but just the circumstances of the negative actions very often create the possibility for our previously created negative karma to ripen very quickly. Okay? So, for example, okay, I was telling you that I do social outreach with inmates, with prisoners. So some of these people, they do a crime, so they create negative karma that will ripen maybe in their future life, but by creating a crime, they also wind up in prison this life. Okay? Or they also wind up having somebody else shoot them or stab them or whatever. Yeah. So often when we're in situations where we do negative actions, it makes it easier for other people, you know, to harm us. In other words, it makes it easier for our own negative karma to ripen. Okay. Similarly, with people who are drinking and drugging. Yeah, when you're drunk, when you're intoxicated, it's very easy for your negative karma to ripen. Because you don't have very much control over your mind. Okay? Okay. If I plan to join retreats or become a nun in the long term, how should I prepare myself? Okay. Well, if you want to join retreats, joining retreats and becoming a monk or a nun are two different situations, so I'll talk about them separately. If you want to join a retreat, you can prepare yourself by doing some reading on the topic of the retreat before you go to it. That is very good. You can also prepare yourself by starting to have a daily meditation practice. When you start going to retreats, it's good to start with short retreats. Okay, so like the 2-day retreat this weekend, it's a good one to start with. It's only 2 days. Okay, and it's also not a live-in retreat, so you don't have to wake up so early in the morning to meditate. Ah, you got it easy. Yeah, but you can begin by going to shorter retreats. And then as you get familiar with the process of doing more meditation and more retreats, then start, you know, attending longer retreats. It's very nice to do group retreats because the group energy and group discipline makes it very easy for us to practice ourselves. We find this very much at the Abbey. You know, people who live at the Abbey and then also the people who visit us tell us that it's so much easier for them to do their meditation practice at the Abbey because everybody is doing it. Okay? So we have 2 meditation periods a day in the morning and in the evening. So everybody is getting up early. Everybody's going to meditate. So it becomes very easy to do it. Yeah, because everybody's doing that. You know, we have a study period. We have a teaching period. It becomes very easy to go to teachings. It becomes very easy to study because everybody's doing it. So when you live in a community like that, you know, the support of everybody else really strengthens your own practice. So if you want to visit a community, that can strengthen your own practice in the short term. But if you want to live in a monastic community, then, of course, you get the long-term benefits from that. If you are thinking of ordaining, there's a number of things you can do to prepare. On my website, tuptonchudren.org, there's a whole section about monastic life and a lot of different things. You can read articles. There's a reading list. It's good if you're thinking about ordaining to go and spend some time in a monastery and see how you like it. At the Abbey, we have a program every summer that is about 2.5 weeks long called Exploring Monastic Life. And it's for people who are thinking, maybe I would like to ordain. In other words, they haven't decided that they want to, but they're thinking, maybe I should. I want to find out more about it. So then, you know, they apply to come to our Exploring Monastic Life program. And then in the program, we talk about different issues related to ordination and, you know, things that you have to work out. And so it's quite a wonderful program. And people live together as a community. They work together so they get the experience of community. So these are things that you can do. Also, if you're thinking of ordaining, or even if you aren't thinking of, are not thinking of ordaining, living with the 5 precepts is a very, very beneficial practice to do. Okay? So taking the 5 precepts to abandon killing, stealing, unwise sexual behavior, lying, and intoxicants, or even if you can't take all 5, take 1, 2, 3, or 4, and then take those precepts and live according to them. And that's a very, very good way to train your mind if you're thinking of becoming a monastic, or even if you're not, it's still a very good way to train your mind and your body and your speech to living in an ethical way. And then, of course, you experience all the benefit of living ethically, you know, right now, and in terms of all the good karma that you create. Okay, so now I have even a bigger pile of questions than I started off with. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow. By the way, on my website, well, I have a few different websites. One is srivasti.org, and that's the Abbey's website, which you're welcome to look at. And then there's tuptonchudren.org, and that one, the webkeepers are all Singaporeans. And so they keep that website updated with different Dharma talks that I've given or that are in audio or video form or articles. There's all sorts of material on that website. So if you pick up one of the pink brochures on your way out, you can find the websites, the URLs listed there, and then you can go on them and download material or read or whatever you like. Okay, so let's sit quietly for a minute, and then we'll dedicate. And let's rejoice at an opportunity well used, the fact that we listened and thought about teachings with a good motivation. So we rejoice at our own merit and that of everybody here. We rejoice at the merit and the good deeds of all sentient beings everywhere throughout the universe. So all the merit they create by making offerings and being generous, by doing prostrations and showing homage to the Three Jewels, by confessing their mistakes, by rejoicing themselves, by inviting their teachers to teach and requesting the Buddhas to remain in our world, by being helpful to other sentient beings, by doing whatever Dharma practice they do. Let's rejoice at all this goodness and then dedicate it so that everybody may have conducive circumstances to practice the Dharma in this and all of their future lives. Let's dedicate so that all these incredible, noble aspirations of bodhisattvas, may we generate them in our own mind. And having generated them, may we carry them out and sincerely work for the benefit of all sentient beings. Let's dedicate so that we always meet perfectly qualified Mahayana teachers and follow their instructions, so that we meet the Sangha in future lives and have the opportunity to practice with them. Let's dedicate so that all beings who are in physical or mental suffering and distress find peace and happiness and good health and harmony. And may all beings develop impartial love and compassion towards each other and realize the ultimate nature of reality and quickly become fully enlightened Buddhas.